Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Chris Rossini, the co-host. And Chris, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Dr. Paul.
Good. I want to talk a little bit today about interest rates. They're starting to go up, and everybody anticipates, even those who are very bullish on everything, still anticipate, and they know there's a limit, you know, to how high the interest rates will go before the enthusiasm for the stock market will dwindle and that the boom times will end. And that's what we want to talk about, a little bit about that today. But I think interest rates have already significantly gone up, even though they're historically low still. You know, in the summer of 2016, the 10-year bond was at 1.3%, and now it's up just barely over 3%. So percentage-wise, that's a big jump. And yet, it hasn't done any real harm yet. But I saw some statistics to show what happens when interest rates go up, what happens to our deficit. We do know about our deficits going up much, much faster than anybody anticipated. And with the new administration, spending has gone up 7%. Revenues, even with this booming economy, so to speak, has gone up 1%. So it's the deficit isn't being helped. And those who've done some calculations said that if you raise the interest rates 1%, the cost for our money, you know, interest cost, will go up $200 billion. So if it goes up 2%, it's going to go up $400 billion. But what if it goes up to 5%? If it goes up to 5% interest rates, it will raise the spending, the deficit, $1 trillion per year. And it's sort of something out of their control. And I think the market will send a control. And a 5% interest rate isn't, you know, really very high, especially since I remember most of my lifetime, interest rates in mortgages were 5, 6, 7, 8, up to 15%. And so it's odd to have rates as low as they are now. So I think we have to anticipate that there's a lot of problems lie ahead, and maybe it will come to the point where the bubble has been pricked and the bubble has collapsed, and everybody will know about what we're talking about.
Yes, and President Trump, before he became president, he was right on the money. He said we're in a big, fat, ugly bubble, and he was correct. But now as president, he stamped his Trump name on it. Now it's the greatest economy in history, and he's not correct. And when this bubble bursts, you could almost predict what he's going to say. He's going to say, oh, the Fed, they raised rates, and they ruined the greatest economy in history. But that's really disingenuous, because I'd like to make an analogy. Imagine if you go to a party and you drink way too much and it's the greatest party in history. And then the next day you are sick as a dog. You have a major hangover. But your friend comes up to you and says, oh, man, why did you ruin the party? Why did you stop drinking? You shouldn't have stopped. And that's the equivalent of what's happening here. The Fed has created a artificial situation, and it has to stop. If you don't stop drinking, you'll die. And if they don't stop inflating, the money will die through hyperinflation. So Trump will not be correct to blame the Fed for raising rates. They shouldn't be touching interest rates at all. No, there should be no interference in the marketplace.
Yeah, and I think what you're describing here is like an addiction. An individual can be addicted. If you cut him off, he's in bad trouble. He feels worse, so he wants to go back to the drugs. And the economy can become addicted to easy money, low interest rates, and lots of spending and deficits. But there's really no increase in wealth in that manner. So this is not going to be a simple little matter when you look at all the debt that's sitting out there. I mean, world debt is huge and growing rapidly, bigger than it's ever been in history. But just our domestic economy, we have credit card debt over $1 trillion. We have student debt, $1.4 trillion. Auto debt is very high. Mortgage debt is $15 trillion. And a lot of that is going to go up automatically. So some of the people who hold mortgages now, it's been reported that, you know, all of a sudden they're going to get a notice that their mortgage went up $200-$300 in 1 month, depending on the size of their mortgage, and they won't be prepared for. But this will then be shown in applying for mortgages, and that will put people out of the market for buying homes. And there's a lot of people in this trouble. In spite of this great prosperity and this wonderful economy, I think it's like 40% have about $400 in spare change if they have any type of setback. And I tell you what, they're going to have a big setback, a lot bigger than $400, not only for the interest rates that are coming, that are increased, but for the price inflation that are coming, and they're going to run out of money. So to me, it's amazing, and people are impressed with the fact that employment is full employment, you know, the greatest in all of history, yet wages haven't gone up. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, about wages haven't gone up, and nominal wages are stagnant, but real wages are much worse. So here we have this full employment, but that usually occurs when there's wage pressure. And that doesn't mean we have absence of price inflation, because, you know, the money's been printed, the value of the dollar goes down, the prices do go up. So that is out there. But it means that the people aren't in really good shape to withstand a whole lot of changes. And up until now, the system that we've had has been very encouraging. Why would people invest in bonds and make so little when the stock market's skyrocketing? So there was a tremendous incentive to buy stocks and not bonds. And that whole attitude may shift. But with this monetary policy we've had, we've caused the businessman to do things that were not logical, in the sense that huge buybacks, you know, and mergers going on. So there's a lot of activity out there. But it doesn't happen because of a free market economy. It happens because of inflation by the Federal Reserve. Easy money, easy, low credit, and they can go out and do this. So there's tremendous buybacks, which pushes all these stocks up. But it doesn't mean that those stocks are having, profits have not gone up in those companies. Matter of fact, they get, more diluted. But the people are very pleased with it, and the companies are doing well, and they get paid their bonuses based on the price of their stocks. But that just can't go on forever, and especially if this creeping up is what we're talking about, the creeping up of interest rates, when there's going to be a shift in attitude, and they say, well, let's look for a more trustworthy bond, as long as they don't look for a government bond or a municipal bond. But they're going to look to maybe make, you know, more interest, because once it's known that the stock market can't go up forever, it usually doesn't, and it usually goes down more sharply than anybody anticipate. And I think what we're talking about is really what other people know about, and they talk about a lot, and that is interest rates. And interest rates are the key to a lot of what people do, both in a positive sense and a negative sense. So I think in the next few months, in a year at least, that we're going to know definitely how long this bubble is going to last.
Yes, and we need market rates, because market rates tell the truth about supply and demand. Let's say you're in a supermarket and a T-bone steak is, I don't know, $10, $12, but the supermarket slashes the price down to $1. Well, right away, they're going to be gobbled up. People will buy all the steaks up, and the shelves will be empty. Probably by the time you even get to the supermarket, will be gone. Well, with interest rates, it's a price. The Federal Reserve pushes down below the market, let's say to 1%, and that brings all the borrowers out. Look at how low the rates are. We can borrow for this. We could borrow for that. A euphoria begins. But they don't run out. Just like the supermarket runs out of steaks, they can create the money and keep feeding new money into the system. They never run out. And that's why all these bubbles, they're the result of all this artificial credit that's pumped into the system. And, you know, anything artificial has to come to an end, and that requires a lot of pain. But the pain is not the crisis. The crisis is the Fed messing with rates. The pain is a return to reality.
Yeah, getting the correction, taking the treatment that nobody ever wants. You know, the whole thing is this is not an accident. Just the policies that we have and the economy we have didn't just pop out of thin air, and it was just a bad judgment here and there. It's a consequence of an economic policy, an economic theory, which we have talked about many times, and that's Keynesianism, inflationism, paper money, fiat money, and this is the result. because what we have done is destroy the most valuable messenger in a free market, and that is the price of money. And Chris, you've already mentioned this, but that is very, very important because it tells you whether people should save or should they spend more or whatever. If they're earning more interest, they might save more. But there's a lot of messages. It tells the businessman what to do. But when you cancel that out, it's price control. And price controls just don't work. It causes problems, and then you have to compensate. So this is when the Fed does it, and they interfere and cause all these problems. They say, oh, the free market is messing things up, so we have to regulate things to make things move more smoothly. They won't just say, well, it's because the Fed doesn't say to itself, well, we just mess it up because we mess up the economy. We destroy the pricing structure and the interest rates, so they won't deal with that. So they come in with more and more regulations, then the thing falls apart. And looking over the years from the Depression on, every time there was a major economic crisis, Congress always comes through with more and more interest rates, thinking that that will take care of it. But this came about because of what was taught in the universities. You know, I can count on a handful of people that I really thought understood free markets economics and sound monetary policy in the Congress. There were variations of the Keynesian philosophy, but there weren't too many out on the House floor preaching the fact that the Fed's the culprit. Not only should we audit it, we should get rid of it and look at it that way because they're causing all these troubles. But they put up with all these booms and busts, and they continue, and each one gets worse. This last one was pretty bad, and in many ways, in spite of these statistics we have, we really never corrected it. We just said, give it more drugs so make them feel better, and we did. And the drug was, you know, the QEs. So we're seeing the consequence of the QEs, and I don't think they're really resolving that at all because there's so much debt being issued. And so is it Trump's fault? Is it the Republicans' fault? The Democrats' fault? Because they're the big spenders. Well, it's both sides, because now we have a Republican conservative executive branch, and we have a Republican Congress. Spending is going up like crazy. But the philosophy is debt isn't all that bad. They teach that in school. Debt is good. That stimulates the economy. What we need is more debt. When you get in a recession, you want more debt and more debt. And if you get into a problem where prices are going up too fast, they'll say, well, the people don't have enough money to buy their groceries, so we have to give them more money. And the businessman is coming up short for expansion. Well, give them more money, make interest rates low. So they do everything wrong. And I think the point that we'd like to make today is that there is an end point, there are market forces, and one will be the interest rates going up. Now, the Fed has something to do with it. They've raised the interest rates 7 times, I think, since this recession sort of came to an end. So they're creeping it up. It still is not very, very high. But eventually, the market plays a role in it. The market ultimately decides what the interest rates will be. When you drift toward a Zimbabwe or Venezuela situation, it isn't the government's going to tell you, what the value of the currency is and who will lend to each other. The market will dictate that, and it won't be the Fed. For now, the Fed still has a lot to say about it, but I think when it gets out of control, interest rates are going to soar, and that's when the bubble will burst, and things will have to be reassessed. And I don't think there will be many more opportunities to prop it up. Right now, they're sort of under the gun, but they've been given some license, because the statistics are good, even though there's a lot of people who don't have much money and they're struggling. But statistics are okay, so we can keep pumping the money in there, because that's going to keep the bubble in the stocks going on. Because I think their number one goal at this time, at least symbolically keeping things together, is the stock market. And they will continue to do that. But eventually, they will have to admit the truth. You can't create wealth by creating monetary units. And what you do is you devalue that currency. For each new unit that you create, you lower the value of the existing currency. It has nothing to do with economic growth. But this is what we've been taught in our universities for a long time. And there's a lot more Austrian free market education going on in the country. You take, like, for the Mises Institute. So there are people out there learning and studying this, but they're not in dominant positions. But I think the answers will be found in true free markets and not in this whole thing about special interest politics and inflationism and deficits don't matter and pretend that bipartisanship is something that doesn't exist. And yet, who passes all these budgets, whether it's the military budgets or the welfare budgets? It's always bipartisan. They argue about other things, and they pretend they hate each other's guts, and in some ways they do. But the behind the scenes, controlled by the deep state and the bankers and the Federal Reserve, and their goals are very, very precise, and the leadership in the Congress doesn't interfere with that. They spend the money, and they accommodate the deficits, and they pretend that they can take care of this with more regulation. Chris, I predict it's not going to work, and we're going to see the end of this in the not too distant future.
Yeah, absolutely. This won't last. And but the more people that understand what needs to replace what we have today, the better. And that's what we hope to reach people. And that'll be my final point, Dr. Paul, that we don't need to be on this boom bust roller coaster. It's not a requirement of life. We could live happily without it. The Federal Reserve and central banks around the world, these are not fixtures of nature. They're man-made aberrations, and they cause nothing but trouble. And there's an alternative, as Dr. Paul points out every week, sound money, free markets, voluntary interactions. We do not need these people to interfere. Now, they're going to try to scare you into believing that you'll die without them, but it's false. I mean, all you have to do is look with your eyes at what they create, and there's a much better world than freedom.
You know, it's trying to sort out truth from fiction and helping us decide policy. But the truth is, the Federal Reserve and the bureaucrats in Congress, they do not know what the proper interest rate should be. That has to be done by the marketplace. But they pretend they know, and they dictate 0.25% here, here, and there, and they play this game, and they do not know. All they can do is mess things up even more. But if you look at this from the perspective of an Austrian viewpoint, you can assess something and come up with some pretty good facts, and that is that once they distort the economy, you can predict a bubble, you can identify a bubble, and you can predict that it will burst and that it will end. And people say, well, how do you know that? Well, just because of the events of what high, low interest rates have done and the spending, and you can see the bubble. But the one thing that we as Austrian economists cannot predict is, oh, it's going to last, you know, for another month or two. It'll last for 6 months. It might last another year. But the next recession is more than likely to be much worse than the last one, and it's unpredictable exactly when it will come. But the die has been cast. There will be another one. There will be a liquidation. There will be a correction. The debt will be eliminated, and the malinvestment will have to be removed. And it will be very messy. Some will survive, but just think of that 40% I mentioned. They have $400 in the bank, and if there's a downturn, that's going to take care of themselves. That's why it should be scary, because there's a lot of noise out there, and there's a lot of recognition of this people hurting more than anybody wants to admit. And that's why, you know, well, what we need is socialism, and they're getting some attention. Of course, it's the socialistic viewpoints that we have been following here for the last several decades that has brought us to the brink. So we don't need more government, more spending, more debt, and more printed money. No, we don't need that. What we need is more liberty, more soundness in our economy, and the most important thing, as far as I'm concerned, is protecting individual liberty, protecting the right of the individuals to work hard, keep their money, spend it, and to restrain the power and control of the government. And that is what we have lost. The founders gave us a document that was supposed to control the size and scope of government, and the Constitution, unfortunately, has failed in that regard. But that is the answer. We still have the outline available to us if we ever decide to clean up this mess, and we're going to have the opportunity. And from my viewpoint, I meet a lot of people who are enthusiastic. They understand these issues, and the big job is to get enough people to endorse these views so when the crisis hits, that we can help move us all in the direction of liberty and peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.